again, and welcome to another episode of Musings on Golf, where great storytelling is what we do each and every week. I'm Kelly Elbin. My co-host and good buddy is Bob Bupka. And in just a minute, you're going to hear from one of golf's greatest instructors, Jim McLean. A little later on, Bob and I are going to talk about Hideki Matsuyama's remarkable week and victory. Bob, it's always good to have our friends William and Harry joining us, and our listeners will hear from them just before we talk to Jim McLean. Hey, Bob, Jim McLean, you've known Jim a long time. When I was editor of PGA Magazine a number of years ago, Jim wrote several articles for me. I've always had great respect for Jim. I like him as a person, and I can understand why his message has been so well received by so many people through his schools.
Yeah, when I think of Jim McLean, you know, I think of quiet knowledge. I mean, he's a wealth of knowledge. And we say we're going to have a special guest every week. Well, you know what? We have special listeners. And the only way to treat special listeners is to have a special guest. And certainly Jim McLean fits that bill this week.
Yeah, not only a great teacher, but he was a terrific player before he decided to become one of the world's great instructors. Word here now from William and Harry, and then on to the interview Bob and I recently did with the great Jim McLean. Our friends at William and Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William and Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com. Bob, our special guest today is one of the greatest teachers in the history of golf. He's a member of the World Golf Teachers Hall of Fame. In 1994, the PGA of America named him its National Teacher of the Year. He has written 13 books on golf, and since 1993, the Jim McLean Golf School continues to help players of varying levels improve their skills. What a pleasure to welcome my friend Jim McLean to Musings on Golf. How are you, Jim?
Well, great, Kelly. It's really nice to be with you and Bob. Looking forward to speaking with you today on all subjects.
Hey, you know, Jim, what I get a kick out of, no matter who I run into, if I reference the name Jim McLean, all I get back is, oh, the nice guy, Jim McLean. They don't just say, yeah, I know Jim McLean. They say the nice guy, Jim McLean. And I think that's the highest compliment you can receive from your fellow pros and other people that you work with.
Well, that's nice of you to say that, Bob.
Been friends a long time, Jim.
Yeah, absolutely, Bob. We go back decades and decades, back to the old days, back in New York, the tour events that you did. I saw you. You were pretty much everywhere. Every big event, you were there.
Yeah, that was quite an experience, you know, doing 41 events a year, and just being out there with the players, became friends with most of them. But, you know, it's like one big family. People don't realize, you know, they think of the PGA Tour as of this massive organization. But when you really analyze it, and when you have the opportunity to be heavily involved, it's like a small family. I often relate it to, it's almost like a traveling circus. You know, week to week, you pack up, you have your good week, and then you move on to another location. But still, to this day, Jim, when people say to me, if I could only do one event a year, what would it be, Bob? And I don't hesitate. I mean, it would be the Open Championship. There's something special about that. They play it in special places. It really is the epitome of professional golf.
It's hard to argue with that. I mean, all the all the majors, of course, are phenomenal. And all the tour events, all the places you travel around America, but certainly the British Open is a, it's just a spectacular event.
One of my biggest thrills was being up in the people that watch it on television, see those yellow boxes at the Open Championship. And I was up in the yellow box at St. Andrews. Tiger was playing, and it was Jack Nicklaus's last Open Championship. And I'm in the yellow booth, and before we started, the producer said, "All right, Bob, you're going to start out covering Tiger, but then when Jack gets near the end of his round, we're going to have you switch and be on the ground to get Jack at 18. So I'm in a dilemma. As Jack gets to 16, I'm saying to myself, how am I going to do this? And then all of a sudden, without thinking, I go, and the lead announcer, Bob Lee, says to me, "What's wrong, Bob?" I said, "A spectator just stepped on my foot. I got to take a break." So I go down, and I get next to the green to be in position for Jack when somebody from the R&A comes walking up rather fast and didn't have a happy look on his face, and I was petrified. And he says to me, Bob, I said, "What?" He says, "Is your foot feeling any better?"
Wow, that's pretty nice, Steele. That's how well-known you are. Everybody knows you. Everybody knows you in all countries, in all courses.
Yeah, Jack went on to be a good friend. Matter of fact, my last birthday, I got a letter in the mail from Barbara and Jack Nicklaus. Thrill that was, Jim.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's very, very special. Absolutely.
Jim, in terms of being well-known, I mentioned all those accolades early on in regards to your teaching, but as Bob and I were looking at your website and a lot of background, the one quick line that just, I love the way it stood out. All it says was, "Made the cut in the Masters," right? It didn't get any deep, but way before Jim McClain was this renowned teacher, you were, and I would assume continue to be, a heck of a player. A little bit about that 72 Masters. You tied for 43rd as an amateur, and also you played in a couple of U.S. Opens as well, right?
Well, look, you know, I was playing really good golf there when I was younger, for sure, and I finished, had a pretty good chance to win the U.S. Amateur. It was medal play the years that I played in the U.S. Amateur. It was a seven-year period when we played medal play, and then since then it's been match play again. But I finished fourth, and that got me in the Masters, which was, quite amazing. It was an amazing thing to get on that first tee. I was playing with Al Geiberger, the PGA champion, and I had a late tee time. We all stayed up in the crow's nest, as amateurs do, Crenshaw and Kite. Jim Simons was a great friend of mine. But yeah, they all teed off. I had the whole day to wait. And then, that was a nervous tee shot. You know, I'd been thinking about it for a few months, for sure. And I was very happy to make contact and get it out there.
Well, that had to be, four plays, Jim McClain now driving. Were you ever more nervous on the first hole of a golf tournament?
I was really nervous. They slide your name. They have a stanchion, as everybody's been, a lot of people have been to the Master. They slide your name in, and Geiberger hit first, and he was considered, the prettiest, nicest swing on the tour. So I was certain he was going to just stripe it down the center, and he hit a terrible drive. He hit a snipe hook over the ninth fairway, and that really relaxed me. And ever since, I've seen Al my whole life. You know, this has been for 50 years almost. I put my arm around him, and I thank him. Man, thanks for that drive you hit, Allie, because I don't know. I mean, that relaxed me a little bit, Kelly.
Yeah. Now, you shot a couple of 75s, I believe, made it at 150. Was that the first gold, an obvious gold? God, I'd love to make the cut.
Yeah, that year was super high scores. We had wind, and I think Nicklaus won with a really high score, like 2-under 1, I think, something like that. Well, I played the second round with Hale Irwin, they paired you every day back then. You changed twosomes. And Irwin didn't say anything to me on the first tee all the way around or on the last hole, which I kind of remind him about now. But he was an unbelievable competitor, you know, fierce competitor, and, you know, such a great player. And I played with Hubert Green in the third round, who won three majors, and Bob Murphy in the last round, who lives near you. And, yeah, so it was a great week for me.
How about the two U.S. Opens you qualified for and played at?
Yeah, I played at Marion and Pebble Beach, and Nicklaus and Trevino played off at Marion, and Trevino won that. I was staying right next to the young Jim Simons, who led the U.S. Open for three rounds as an amateur, and he played the last round with Jack Nicklaus, and he still had a chance, actually, with one hole to go, ended up finishing fifth. And then the next year at Pebble Beach was just unbelievably difficult. I think that's maybe the highest winning score. And Nicklaus said it was the most difficult major that he ever played in, and he wrote in his book. And Jack won, and I think just two guys broke 290. I mean, it was windy, cold, and the rough was unbelievably high. Yeah, that was a scary event. I played with two great players in that Open as well. It was really, really fun. I played with J.C. Snead and Bobby Nichols in that. So that's going back a long time. Some of your people who listen will probably remember him.
Oh, absolutely.
You mentioned quite a few names, Jim. Have you, if I were to ask you, who had the best golf swing of anybody that you have witnessed, what would you say?
Yeah, that's a tough one because you have to go, you know, it was Hogan, Byron Nelson, and then you go to the Nicklaus and Tiger. I always liked watching. I played with Johnny Miller a few times, and I always loved watching Miller hit because he just hit the most unbelievable iron shots, just rifle shots. They were really fun to watch. Of course, now Rory McIlroy to me makes an easy-looking swing that hits the ball forever, kind of like Freddie Couples. I always loved Freddie's swing. He's from Seattle, Washington, like me, and he also went to the University of Houston like I did. He came after me. But Freddie always looked like he was swinging, you know, relatively easy or maybe really easy, and the ball came out of there like a cannon shot.
You worked with a lot of really good players, right?
And yes.
I'm often wondered about that. I mean, you look at whether it's Greg Norman or Curtis Strange, you've got Keegan Bradley, who you worked with, who's now the new U.S. Ryder Cup captain, Gary Woodland, who won the U.S. Open at Pebble. When you teach an elite player, what's the ask of you? What are you looking for? What's the nuance that you might be looking for as opposed to a, quote, everyday player? Is it would seem to me a very radical difference in terms of what you're being asked to do.
Well, it is the difference, of course, and obviously their livelihood, and it's a lot of responsibility, really, because you know, you want to do the right thing and obviously not make them worse. We're trying to get them better, but it's a little bit of a risk. So I always try to weigh the risks. You know, at times I worked with Greg Norman; he was a little bit older. I did go to a U.S. Senior Open with him, where he had a great chance to win up in Indianapolis at Pete Dye's course up there. And then I worked with Bernard Langer when he was in a little bit of a bad streak one time. And so when he was in a bad streak, it was kind of easy for me to say something to him that I thought would help him regarding swing speed. Keegan Bradley came to me when he was very young, right out of college, and he didn't really have a resume. You know, he hadn't played in big tournaments or won things, so that was a little easier. And I would say recently, in the last recent years, I worked with Russell Henley, who just needed a little bit of a tweaking, really, to me. He had specific things he wanted to work on. But I always like to look at the whole game, you know, the long game, which most people, that's where they want to work on their game for sure. They're driving their irons, but then there's the short game, which is such a huge part of scoring. Then there's the management game, which is your watching them on the course, managing their game on the course, and also their physical fitness and other attributes that they do. So that's a big part. And then the fourth part over there is the mental game. For me, the kind of put the pie together, the mental game, which, you know, when you get to that level, you got to spend a lot of time on the mental game, on how their pre-shot routine, their pre-game planning, their ability to visualize and relax. And not that you're a sports psychologist, but, you know, you do need to be as a teacher. A sports psychologist has to be part of your repertoire for sure, especially when you go to tournaments with a tour player.
Is one of the critical problems as a teacher knowing what to change and what not to change? I mean, if something really works for a player, I mean, if you came upon Jim Furyk, a normal teacher would say, oh, we got about 50 things to do here. And,
yeah.
And isn't that the hard part, being able to use your expertise to evaluate what needs to be changed and what would be better left alone?
Well, that's absolutely right. I really come from a playing part as a teacher. I think some teachers come more from the academic part, but I lived at Houston with great players like John Mahaffey, and who won the PGA, and Phil Rogers won the British Open. Bruce Litsky was my roommate there, and then after we left college for a year of professional golf, we lived together. And Bruce had his own swing. He took it inside. The face was shut. He had a bowed left wrist at the top, and he had the obvious over-the-top move, and he just hit it perfect. You know, he just was he hit it long with a little fade. And I learned, and also Fuzzy Miller was there, who had the opposite loop to the inside. So I learned that guys could really play by living with them and playing with them pretty much every day, and just playing in a lot of other events, you know, as a player myself, and seeing these guys, like say a Trevino that had some, you know, a different looking swing when you first saw him, but what's the ball doing and how often can you repeat? I think that's the whole thing is, you know, how, can you hit the ball in the center of the face? Do you have swing speed and can you repeat?
Hey, Jim, based on your expertise, looking forward 10 years from now, will the golf swing be identical to the best swings of today, or will it be something radically different?
That's a really good, interesting question. I think the teaching continues to improve, and the swings get a little bit closer on the tour now. We don't have quite as much diversity in the golf swings. A lot of swings that look very simple and very efficient, but you still have different swings. Everyone's going to have their own DNA, their own swing, some different stuff in there. And Trevino told me, and I think he said it to other people, I had the chance to do CNBC TV with him one year. I spent quite a bit of time with him. And he also, when I was the pro at Sleepy Hollow, played in the tournament there, and I spent quite a bit of time with him there. But he said he thought having a move in your swing what made golf easier. He said, if you're just perfect going back, then you got to be perfect coming down. But he said, well, you know, when he had a little move where he dropped the club on the downswing, he said, I knew that move, and under pressure, I knew that move was there for me, which was an interesting comment.
Very interesting.
Well, yeah, and Lee, obviously unique. We're delighted to be joined by PGA of America Master Professional Jim McLean. Jim's the CEO of the Jim McLean Golf School, three locations in the United States, as well as ones in Mexico, Spain, and South Korea. Hey, Jim, how about in terms of, you know, you had a All-American at, you're an All-American at Houston, played some on tour, then made the decision to become a club professional, et cetera. I'm wondering from an instruction, from a teaching standpoint, were there gentlemen, women who mentored you, who influenced you as an instructor, the Harvey Penix of the world, anybody like that?
Well, I was really lucky at Houston to get to know Jackie Burke, and Jimmy DeMeritt was there also, but Jackie Burke became a really good friend of mine early on. You know, somehow I played out at Champions quite a bit in Houston. Champions has hosted every tournament, you know, from the Opens to the Ryder Cups to everything. And Jackie would come do schools with me in New York, when I was in New York, and then at Doral and down in Miami, out in PGA West, when I had my schools out there. He was just unbelievable. And then I met Ken Venturi at Westchester Country Club, where I first started teaching. And then we became good friends, played a few hundred times with Venturi. And, you know, Venturi was a U.S. Open champion. Jackie was a Masters champion, a PGA champion. So they were tied in with everybody. And, you know, that really gave me a major entree into, you know, that high level of golf instruction. So, those guys really helped. Also, Claude Harmon, I got to know very well at Wingfoot. And then out when I was at Tamarisk, he was right across the street at Morningside. So we had lunch every week. And Claude was probably the greatest storyteller of all time, you know. So it was just great, great lunches.
I mean, those are tremendous influences. It was one of them. I mean, being an understudy, I suppose, to any of those. But Mr. Harmon, did you learn something in particular from him as a teacher from those lunches that really you continue to use today?
Well, Mr. Harmon was considered the greatest bunker teacher in the world. So a lot of people came to him for bunker instruction, and I really spent quite a bit of time with him, a lot of time with him in a bunker, all types of shots, but he was a genius. He was also a great player. He won the Masters and finished, I think, third in the U.S. Open, and he's great friends with Ben Hogan, as was Burke and Venturi, too. Great, great friends with Hogan and Nelson, so that lineage went back a long time. So that kind of information, of course. His sons, four great teachers, they all had that same bunker style, and Butch taught that to Tiger Woods. And you could, you know, when I'd watch Tiger hit bunker shots, you know, you could see him, like, went all the way back to Mr. Harmon.
Let me ask you this, Jim, and we're talking to Jim McClain. As I said, this is really a privilege and an honor, one of the more respected teachers ever to be put his foot in the game. How do you rate Doug Sanders? Was he above average, below average, exceptional? What is your scorecard on Mr. Sanders?
Oh, man, Doug was a genius ball striker. I had so much fun playing with him and just watching him hit golf balls. Did spend quite a bit of time with Doug. I got a nice picture of him right here on my wall in my office. Super underrated guy. He won 20 times on the PGA Tour. But, you know, Doug was a big gambler, and he made most of his money off the PGA Tour. He also was down in Houston. When I lived there, he had a place in Houston, Texas, and he had huge money games when we were at Houston, not with us, but with the gamblers in Texas. We saw some major, major money games down there. And that's what Sanders loved to do. And he had a golf swing that, you know, again, didn't look that great. It was small, a shorter backswing, and probably not a beautiful looking swing, but a just super straight ball striker. And obviously, he's remembered for missing the little putt that he went into the playoff with Nicklaus at the British Open and lost that. So that was his one time where he should have won for sure a major, but he was right there close to winning many major championships.
You know, Jim, I've asked Doug, I say, hey, Doug, you ever think about that putt you missed at St. Andrews? He'd say, oh, Bob, come on. Sometimes 5 minutes goes by without me thinking about it.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
I was standing next to Jackie, and Doug walked by, and Jackie says to me, hey, Bob, you know what Doug Sanders does with his old clothes? I said, no, Jackie. He says, he wears them. So Doug Sanders, probably one of the more colorful guys ever to play the game of professional golf.
I think he had 300 pair of shoes at home. Really? Yeah.
We're absolutely thrilled to be joined by Jim McClain here on Musings on Golf. So, Jim, hearing you, mention the Ken Venturis and the Claude Harmons, but also as we moved forward, you were one of the ones who pioneered the use of video for golf instruction. And I'm wondering, I mentioned earlier about you being the 94 PGA Teacher of the Year. How different is that guy in terms of his teaching than the 60 teachers you have today with the Jim McLean Golf Schools and your approach being able to utilize this incredible technology that we have?
Yeah.
No, I think I've learned a lot since then. I know in New York, they started that award in 1986, and I got that award in the Metropolitan section. But you had to be a certain amount of years or something in the PGA to get it to be the Nashville PGA Teacher of the Year. And Manuel De La Torre was the first
out of Milwaukee,
teacher of
right?
the year. He was, fabulous, just a fabulous man, unbelievable, great teacher. Getting that award eventually was a really neat thing. But, I've learned a lot more since then. Yeah, there's so many new things. We started with biomechanics in the early 2000s, really. And now we've got force plates. And, I continue to use the video. We do studies every year. All of my guys do one aspect of the swings. We look very carefully at the entire PGA Tour, the top 100 players in the world, and continue to study. And you keep learning things, and you keep seeing new things. And I think you get better as a teacher by the knowledge that you keep attaining. So you got to keep going after it. And that's a fun part for me.
I'm wondering about the schools themselves. And you were the director of golf at some very high-profile, old-line established courses up in the Metropolitan section in New York. You're down at Doral. But what was the impetus to start the Jim McLean schools? Why?
Yeah, well, I was at Sleepy Hollow Country Club, which was it's just a fabulous, absolutely great place. And they treated me so well there. And, my contract was, for me, it was 7 months and 5 months off. I mean, it was a tremendous place to be. I loved it. I just got offered this incredible offer from the Cascell family. They owned Doral in Miami. Jimmy Ballard had been there before me. He was a really super well-known teacher. And, I had to make a decision of what to do. Go do this full-time teaching, which I was doing a lot of teaching in New York at that time. And I just had to make a decision, is this something I want to do full-time and also run my own business? So I would be an owner of my own business as opposed to working at the club, although I love that. So it was an opportunity, Kelly, and it was a tough decision for me to move my family to down to Florida, to Miami, but I had two young boys, and then that gave me the summers off. So it was you work in the winter, and then I had the summers off, so we were able to take a lot of trips. I was able to do a lot of with my kids because, you've been in this business. You grew up in the business. I worked 7 days a week, morning till late at Sleepy Hollow. There was no days off. You work every weekend. Of course, you had a lot of time off in the winter, but for that period of time, and the summer months when the kids were off school, you were working.
Kelly, my brain is on overload. I don't think I can learn much more from the great Jim McLean. Why don't you do the honor of saying goodbye and express our appreciation for having somebody the caliber of Jim McLean on Musings on Golf. You have been fabulous, Jim.
Well, thank you very much, Bob. I really appreciate it.
Well, I will, but I'm not going to let Mr. McLean leave without a couple of questions. Guys, Bob, we go back a long ways, and Jim, you and I are the same, and I'm very proud to be the son of a terrific PGA of America golf professional, Max Elbin. And my dad always had such fondness and such pride. I think he had 40 or 50 of his assistant professionals who went on to become head professionals, directors of golf, right? Jim, you've had more than 250 of those you've mentored who've gone on to be directors of golf, head professionals, directors of instruction. Jim McLean, that's an unbelievable legacy.
Well, thank you. I am very proud of that, and grateful to have so many fantastic men and women come down here to train and, you know, really work on their teaching. And then some have stayed here, of course, and still teach with me down here now. And then some have gone on to these other great opportunities in different places across the United States. And, you know, so I get to see most of them from time to time, and we stay in touch. We're a pretty big family, really. And yeah, it's a fantastic thing that, you know, that came about. It's not really something I planned, but it just happened. And the more we had people come and have success, the more people wanted to come down here and work. So it just got easier and easier to do that. And if you have great people, of course, yeah, they've got a great chance of going on.
A dream foursome. We asked this question for all of our guests, Jim. You know, if you had a dream foursome, if you could pick three individuals, whether they're living or deceased, to round out that dream foursome, who would they be, and where would you play? And yeah, and why would you pick the three? Why?
Well, I've heard that question. There's probably 1,000 people that I would pick to play with. Golly, I wish you wouldn't ask me that question. I'm not ready for it. No, you'd always say your dad and your mom and. You know, if you could pick them out, I'd probably want to play with Ben Hogan and, say, Tiger Woods and, let me think, let's say Sylvester Stallone.
What?
Those
three
guys.
Why Sly Stallone? Where'd that come from?
I don't know. Just off the top of my head. But I've spent a lot of time with him, and a long time ago. I haven't seen him, but we had a lot of fun. He was a good, great, great person.
JimMcLean.com is the site for the Jim McLean Golf Schools. Great guy. What an unbelievable instructor, Bob.
Absolutely incredible. And it's a pleasure and an honor to have been his friend for a long, long time. Certainly enjoyed Jim McLean on Musings on Golf.
Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com.
Titleist is the number one ball in golf. Yes, being number one is a number, and more players trust the Pro V1 or Pro V1X than all other golf balls combined. But being number one is more than a number. It's a mindset. It's a relentless mission to design and manufacture the best performing golf balls in the game, so you can chase whatever your number one is. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Celebrating its 30th year, the South Florida PGA Golf Pass offers the ultimate summer golf experience with special access to more than 100 private, semi-private, and public golf facilities. From May 1st through October 31st, Golf Pass members can enjoy special low rates, exclusive member-only outings, special offers, and more. For just $60, you can purchase the South Florida PGA Golf Pass and instantly gain access to all these great benefits through the member-only app. It's simple. Pay, download, play. Visit sfpgagolf.com/golfpass for more information. That's sfpgagolf.com/golfpass. Hey, Bob, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about Hideki. We're going to talk about this young man who won the U.S. Amateur. But McLean, again, you know, he reminds me a lot. My dad, Max Elbin, was a great teacher. And my dad always stressed, Bob, he would say, you know, almost in the middle of a lesson, he would say something like, now, I'm not saying too much to you, right? I'm not clouding your mind. And I know we live in a more advanced time now with TrackMan and so forth. And Jim's taken advantage of that. But I think Jim's almost his bedside manner, if you will, as an instructor. He's just got that way to be able to communicate and not talk down to people or cloud their mind with too much. I think that's been a big part of his success, Bob.
Yeah, and you know what? I've been around long enough that I go back to the days of Harvey Penick. Matter of fact, had a lesson from Harvey. And the slogan that he had, which pertains perfectly to what you just mentioned, Kelly, is that, listen, I'm not going to give you a whole bottle of aspirin. I'm going to give you one aspirin, and that's going to do the trick. And I think that's what Jim McClain does so well. He doesn't inundate you with what he wants you to improve on. And boy, oh boy, certainly one of the great, great all-time teachers ever to be a part of this game.
Yeah, we thank Jim very much for joining us. So, Bob, what an almost to say that Hideki Matsuyama had an amazing week is almost an understatement. He and his coach and his caddy, they're robbed in London. He loses his wallet. Fortunately for Hideki, he still had his passport. Therefore, he could get to Memphis. Bob, he goes out and plays with a brand new caddy, plays great, and then inexplicably loses not only his game, but the lead, five up at the turn. Then all of a sudden he's one down. Then he makes a great putt at 17 and wins the FedEx St. Jude Championship. He's a great player. I was very happy for him, Bob. But, boy, he put a lot more drama into it than we might have thought, huh?
He certainly did. You know, when you think of Hideki, he carries the country of Japan on his shoulders. I mean, he has so many photographers and so many journalists that follow each and every move. And yet, you know what, Kel? He does it with a smile. Yeah. I mean, this guy, before all said and done, he's going to prove to be one of the great, all-time great players of all time.
His caddy will be back on the bag this week. They were able to get his credentials, I guess his passport, taken care of. So he'll be back as they head to Castle Rock for the BMW Championship this week. Let's hear what Hideki, through his translator, Bob Turner, had to say about winning in a most fascinating way last week in Memphis.
I'm especially happy to be able to win one of the FedEx playoff series tournaments. I've tried hard for 10 years, and it's a great feeling of satisfaction finally to be able to have done it.
Bob, he did it. Boy, there was a lot of pressure down the stretch for guys who are just trying to get into the top 50 for this week for BMW. And to me, at least, it was pretty riveting. I don't usually watch a lot of non-major tournaments, Bob. I got to be very honest with you, but not to the extent that I watched FedEx. But man, I watched this, and Tom Kim felt so bad for the kid. He's standing on the 16th tee, reachable par five. He's 46th on the FedEx Cup standings at that point. Ends up making bogey. Then he doubles 17. Then he hits it in the water on a brutally tough finishing hole at 18, and finishes outside the top 50. Conversely, Eric Cole, who also hit it in the water on 18, managed to make five, a bogey on the hole, gets in. Nick Dunlap, who, for goodness sake, Bob, started the year as an amateur, and he finishes, what, fifth in the tournament and pars the last hole to get in. Just that, those side stories, those subplots, there's a lot of drama going on there, Bob.
Well, you're right on the money there, Kelly Elvin. You know, it just proves that there's so much talent now out on the PGA Tour. Sure, Hideki is on top of that pile, but, you know, Eric Cole, what he has done this year, I mean, it's unbelievable. And the amateur playing like he has, it's just mind-boggling stuff. It gets me excited for the 2025 campaign already.
Yeah, and they've already released that schedule for 2025. We do have the event, as I mentioned, at Castle Rock this weekend, where they used to play the International. You had a good story about that last week. But, Bob, there's a lot that not only do you get into that event coming up, but getting into it get you into all the signature events on the PGA Tour next year, being in the top 50. It's a huge bonus. One of the guys who didn't make it, and it's been a tough slog for Jordan Spieth. He's had a left wrist injury that's really nagged him, Bob. He's going to undergo surgery. I think the PGA Tour is so much better when you have a consistently good playing Jordan Spieth, if you will. Get that surgery done, young man, and get back out there healthy, because the game of golf misses you. He hasn't been Jordan Spieth for a while.
Yeah, and he's just the perfect example of what the players are going through. Every time they take a swing, every time they hit a golf shot, they run the risk of suffering an injury, and we wish Jordan Spieth the very best. I mean, we started interviewing him when he was in high school, and he's good for the game, as you accurately pointed out there, Cal.
We may have seen a future Jordan Spieth and certainly a future John Rahm, with Jose Leigh Ballester winning the U.S. Amateur on Sunday. Great stuff. On his 21st birthday, coached by Victor Garcia, Sergio's father, a three-time All-American at Arizona State, where John Rahm went. So this Spaniard, by the way, first Spaniard to win the U.S. Amateur, only the second Spaniard, Rahm being the very first to win a USGA championship when Rahm won the U.S. Open. Great talent. Boy, this kid's really, really talented. Young man from Iowa who was runner-up. Boy, he took him down to the last. I mean, it was a two-up win on 17 over a 36-hole match. But hats off to what appears to be a real rising star.
Yeah, and you know, it's amazing. I look at Sergio's dad, and I see a little Harvey Penick there. That doesn't say a lot, but when he says something, boy, you better listen. Victor's been a great part of professional golf, and we salute him on now coaching the winner of the U.S. Amateur. I mean, that is just incredible stuff.
Before we go, I want to take a tip of the hat. I'm going to be very lucky at the end of this week, Bob. I'm going to go over, make a drive over from West Palm Beach area where I live over to Naples, Florida, for the 90th birthday celebration of one of the greatest football players ever to play the game and the greatest quarterback I ever saw, Sonny Jurgensen. Sonny was a great quarterback for the Washington Redskins back in the day, old number 9. He's lived over in the Naples area with his wife, Margo, for many, many years. I was lucky enough to be the statistician for the Redskins radio network for 3 seasons and got to know Sonny quite well. He's been extremely kind to me, and his son, Gunner, invited me over. He said, feel like I'm part of the family, which is a really cool thing. So I'm going to go over. We're going to play a little golf. And Billy Kilmer, who was a guest on our show not too long ago, Bob, is also going to be among those celebrating 90 years for number 9. He's quite a gentleman. What an unbelievable quarterback and a true Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he certainly was. And great to hear. Still with us at 90 years old, Sonny Jurgensen. Boy, you are a lucky man there, Kelly Elbin. There are a lot of football fans that would love to be in your position when you get a chance to spend quality time with Mr. Sonny Jurgensen.
Well, and knowing Sonny, the cigars will be lit up. I'm sure I'll be having one of those, and we may have a cocktail or two to celebrate a remarkable guy. Bob, this has been a lot of fun. Again, we thank Jim McClain for joining us. Musings on Golf is always about great storytelling, as we talk about, Bob. And I kind of like we turned the format a little bit this week. I got to tell you what, I think I kind of like it. Don't forget to drop by WilliamandHarry.com and take advantage of the 15 off MOG promo code.
Boy, that was fun. I mean, Jim McClain, golly, doesn't get any better than that. Hey, thank you for listening.
Bob, thank you. The great showman, Bob Bupka. For him, Kelly Elbin signing off. Musings on Golf.